So today I want to go back to talking about the CMB Fisher matrix in particular and properties of the Fisher matrix in general. But first I want to, it'll be useful to think of the Fisher matrix, which is a object with two indices defined on some space with coordinates theta, and in a way that's analogous to the metric in GR. And there's a particular type of GR argument that I want to recycle later in the lecture in the Fisher matrix context. So I just want to start by giving an example of the type of argument that I mean. So the argument, frequently in GR, you can answer a question by first answering it in some special coordinate system, and then figuring out how to write the answer in a way where it's independent of the coordinate system. So just as an example, let's say that I have two particles of mass m. This is a little bit of a tangent, but I think it helps illustrate something later in the lecture. I just want to give an example of the type of argument that I have in mind. So I have two particles of mass m whose world lines cross. And I want to define p mu and q mu to be the four momenta at crossing. And I'd like to derive an expression for E12, the energy of particle one. As observed in the rest frame of particle two. Suppose particle two is a particle detector, and it captures particle one and observes its energy. If I'm interested in computing that, then I claim that it's given by this expression. And the way that I derived that is by reasoning as follows. I'm not assuming the metric is Minkowski. I'm allowing an arbitrary metric, g mu nu, at the space-time point where the world lines cross. So here's my thought process. First, I went to a primed coordinate system, which are normal coordinates, or the rest frame coordinates. For particle two. And what that statement means is that in prime coordinates, the metric looks Minkowski at that point. Generally speaking, in GR, you can always choose normal coordinates at a particular point so that the metric looks Minkowski at that point. The coordinates are just time as measured by a physical clock that the observer carries along the world line, and the spatial coordinates are just distances that they measure with physical rulers. Now, you cannot, in general, choose coordinates so that the metric is Minkowski in a neighborhood around the point, because the metric might have curvature. If the curvature tensor is non-zero in one coordinate system, it's non-zero in every coordinate system, and that constrains the second derivatives of the metric to be non-zero. But we're not talking about derivatives or anything. Everything's just happening at this single point. In that coordinate system, the four momentum of particle two is given like this. And the four momentum of particle one would be E12, the quantity that we're trying to derive an expression for. And I suppose the spatial components would be P12, the momentum of particle one as measured by a particle detector, and the two rest frame. In fact, the problem has been set up so that E12 is more or less defined to be whatever appears here in the zero component when you go to this special coordinate system. I write this down and then I sort of scratch my head to find a covariant expression which gives me E12. So, for example, the zeroth component of P prime is non-covariant. It doesn't transform as a scalar. But if I stare at this for a bit, I can come up with this expression. If I dot P prime and Q prime together using this metric, I get minus M E12, and I put in the factor of minus 1 over M. And this expression is covariant, or rather, I guess a better way of saying it would be non-scalar. This is a scalar. It transforms as a scalar. Its value is the same in all coordinate systems. And so that completes the derivation. I know in one coordinate system that this is the right answer, and I've written it in a way which has so where it has the same value in all coordinate systems. One thing I was wondering when I was making the notes is whether this type of argument in GR has a name. Does anyone know if there's a name? I find myself constructing this type of argument sometimes when I do GR calculations. But as far as I know, it doesn't have a name. So let's call it special coordinate system argument. I'm going to make a few more arguments in the lecture. A few more special coordinate system arguments in the lecture in the Fisher matrix context. But I just wanted to start with an example of the GR context, or this type of argument is probably more familiar. I apologize for giving it such a non-catchy name. I was on the spot. OK. Going back to the Fisher matrix, the next thing I want to calculate is the CMB Fisher matrix. We already calculated the CMB Fisher matrix in a context where the CLs were the parameters theta A of the Fisher matrix, and the data were the noiseless ALMs. And I want to revisit the CMB Fisher matrix in a different example where the cosmological parameters are where the model parameters are cosmological parameters. For example, these might be the 6 parameters of the standard model. And I'm interested in calculating the 6x6 CMB Fisher matrix if the CMB ALMs are observed perfectly. Let me say up front that if you're doing this calculation in practice, you would calculate and you needed to know, for example, the CMB power spectrum in the fiducial model, that you would calculate that numerically using one of these community software packages like CAMB or CLASS. And another thing that you can calculate, which will appear in the final answer, is the derivative of CL with respect to a cosmological parameter. And the way you would do that, like omega baryon h squared or some other cosmological parameter. And the way you would do that is using CAMB, as a black box, is that you would run it twice. With the cosmological parameters, with the parameter theta A that you're interested in differentiating with respect to, increase a little bit and then decrease a little bit. And you would approximate this numerical derivative by this finite difference of power spectra. Generally speaking, when doing this in practice, you might want to experiment with the step size a little bit. If the step size is too large, then the first order Taylor approximation will break down and this won't be a good approximation to the derivative. And something else goes wrong if the step size is chosen too small. Namely, the calculation becomes susceptible to round-off error. CAMB will compute these CLs up to some numerical accuracy. And if you're trying to difference two quantities that are too close to each other, then independent round-off errors in the two calculations can lead to a large error in the derivative. And as a final detail, you want to, the most numerically stable way of estimating this derivative by finite difference is to use this two-sided differencing scheme. That would be more stable than, for example, a scheme where you did this and divided by one factor of delta theta. In the problem set two, you'll have to compute these derivatives using a bunch of pre-generated CAMB runs that correspond to these power spectra in the numerator. Okay, so assume that these can be calculated numerically. So here's the Fisher matrix. With respect to of the CMB, with respect to a general set of cosmological parameters theta. Here's the definition. I'll write this as, I'll write the data as ALM. And then in the next step, I'm using an equation from the previous lecture. We wrote down this conditional likelihood and found, after a little algebra trick that allowed the m equals zero and non-zero terms to be written symmetrically, found that the log likelihood could be written like this. So now I'm just going to differentiate. Remember, the theta dependence here is arising because CL is a function of theta. And when I take the Hessian matrix of this log likelihood, I'll get terms that involve first derivatives of CL and terms that involve second derivatives of CL. So let me bring the minus sign out. This is two lines of algebra in my notes, but it's straightforward, so let me just write down what answer you get. I had to stare at it one more time just to convince myself that the signs were actually right. Oh, wait. I did my blackboard's with. Okay, now I'll do it. Now I'm doing an algebra step where I take the expectation value over ALM. And the only thing I have to take the expectation value of is an ALM squared. So in this next step, I'll write it out. All I'm actually doing is replacing ALM squared by CL, with no expectation value. also, when I substitute CL for ALM squared, then this sum will just become a factor of 2L plus 1. So let me do that as well. So now what this is, CL, 2CL squared. Plus one. Okay. Now, it turns out that the terms with second derivatives of CL cancel, and the terms with first derivatives of CL differ by a factor of 2. So if I put in this, I have a 1/2 in this term that's not in this term. So putting in this outer minus sign, I get the final answer. Let me remind you that this is the cosmic variance limited CMB Fisher matrix. And comment, and showing this is one of the parts of problem set 2. If you had if you had instrumental noise, and I'm not putting in the other instrumental complications that would arise in a real forecast, namely the beam and the finite sky coverage, but if the only ingredient I'm adding is a noise power spectrum NL, then the result would look like this. And one difference here is that, say with noise, If you were doing a cosmic variance limited forecast, then as you sum over L, you just keep getting more and more contributions to the Fisher matrix. They would probably go up as a function of L because of this factor of 2L plus 1. And you'd have to just by hand cut off the sum at some value of L max. Whereas if you have instrumental noise, what will happen is that for large L, NL will be large compared to CL, and the sum will converge. So you can just run the sum out to whatever value of L will make the sum converge, make the Fisher matrix converge. So this is a real useful formula that lots of cosmologists might be interested in using if they have some cosmological parameters that they're interested in forecasting, say the 6 parameters of the cosmological model, maybe with the 7th, more interesting parameter added, then you can apply this formula. You can run CAMB to get CL and to get the derivatives. And you can get a 7x7, say, Fisher matrix that will tell you, at least within a certain approximation, the Fisher approximation, will tell you, let you forecast anything quantity that you want involving those 7 parameters. You can forecast the error on any parameter marginalized over all of the others or over a subset of the others. So I just want to talk a little bit about the mechanics of that, what you do with this matrix after you've computed it.
I just have a question about calculating this matrix. So yesterday we calculated the Fisher matrix for the CLs.
That's right.
So taking the analogy with the metric from GR, it looks like we could have just treated this as a change of coordinates.
That is absolutely right. You're like 20 minutes ahead of me. I was going to write down the transformation law and show how the two, you didn't, in fact, really need to do this calculation. You could have just inferred it from the previous calculation that we did. So that's absolutely correct. Okay. As you anticipated, I next want to talk about some general properties of the Fisher matrix. So the first property is additivity. So consider the following situation, which I'll first describe informally. I have some space of model parameters theta, and I have a data set D, which under the hood consists of two independent subsets, D1 and D2. The diagram is supposed to mean that the model parameters, the same model parameters theta, determine the probability distributions of each of these pieces. But the two subsets of the data can be simulated independently of each other. So if data set D is a union of data sets D1 and D2, where D1 and D2 are independent, then the Fisher matrix is additive. This theorem is straightforward to prove from the definition of the Fisher matrix once you write down the formal definition of independence. It just means that in this context, independent just means that the joint PDF of particular realization D1 and D2, conditioned on a set of model parameters theta, is the product of, factorizes as the product of conditional PDFs for the two data sets. This condition means that once the thetas have been specified, D1 and D2 are statistically independent. Then if you plug into the definition of the Fisher matrix, here's the Fisher matrix for the joint data set. Then when I take the log, this product becomes a sum. And then the Hessian commutes with the sum. So I just get this. Which is the definition of the Fisher matrix F1 and F2. So sometimes the Fisher matrix is called the Fisher information matrix, because the term information is supposed to suggest a quantity which accumulates linearly as more data is added. By the way, this guy, Ronald Fisher, is like the Isaac Newton of statistics. His name is on everything. So you can looking back on some of our previous calculations, for example, this expression for the CMB Fisher matrix, you can sort of see this additivity at work since, for example, the final result has the form of an outer sum over L. And it has to have that form because the different L values in the CMB are independent. You could imagine once the cosmological parameters or the power spectrum have been fixed, then you could imagine thinking of a CMB experiment as an independent experiment for L equals 2, L equals 3, and so on. And the quantity inside the sum here is just the Fisher information from a single value of L. Analogously, the factor of 2L plus 1 had to be there because the 2L plus 1 M values at a given value of L are independent of each other. Um, So you've probably seen... You've probably seen in data analysis papers, you know, some situation like this, where I have an experiment that measures two parameters, theta 1 and theta 2, with a long skinny ellipse. So one parameter combination is measured, we have a degeneracy, one parameter combination is measured better than the other. And then maybe you can do a second type of experiment on the same model space that measures a complementary ellipse. Then if I combine these constraints, then I get good constraints on both parameters. It's sort of intuitively clear that there's like an algebra for adding error ellipses together, so that this picture plus this picture equals this picture. But it may not be so clear what formal mathematical operation is actually being performed here. And it's just adding the inverse covariance matrices. If this ellipse is described by covariance matrix C1 and this ellipse is described by covariance matrix C2, then the equation that I would use to draw this picture is adding the inverse covariance matrices. Another way of seeing that would be to think about multiplying the PDFs, since it's C inverse that actually appears in the multivariate Gaussian PDF. If I multiply the PDFs together, it's the C inverses that add. Okay, so the next important property of the Fisher matrix is the transformation law. It applies to a setup like this, where I have some data which depends probabilistically on some model parameters. And then those model parameters theta are functions of some parameters theta prime. So the arrow is supposed to indicate that whatever's on the right is a function of whatever's on the left. And this situation could be describing a reparameterization of the model space. If the number of theta primes is equal to the number of thetas. Or it could be describing a submodel. Maybe you've done the Fisher matrix forecast for some large model space, like an extension of the standard model with many parameters. And now you're just interested in restricting that forecast to some submanifold of the original model space. In this situation, the Fisher matrices F prime and F in the two model spaces are related to each other by this expression. See that? Oh, sorry. I'm going to put the theta primes downstairs. This is the same transformation law in the case of a reparameterization. It's the same transformation law as the metric in general relativity with two downstairs indices. And in the case of a submodel, then there's a construction in GR where if I have a subspace of another space, then I can pull back the metric, or more generally, pull back any tensor with all lower indices using the Jacobian of the map. And the result will transform as a tensor with all lower indices on the pulled back space. So So as an example, as you were anticipating, as an example, we computed the CMB Fisher matrix twice. By the way, before I say that, let me back up and say that you might think that the proof of this would be pretty trivial, if it's true, in the same way that the proof of the additivity was fairly trivial, but it's actually a little non-trivial. There's some like cancellations and identities that I want to build up. So I'm going to skip the proof for now, but come back to it. So as an example, we calculated the CMB Fisher matrix twice, and in hindsight, we could have drawn this picture where our first calculation was the Fisher matrix on CL space, and our second calculation was the Fisher matrix on a set of space of cosmological parameters. And it's easy to see. If I write down the Fisher matrices that we got in the two cases. Then I could have deduced that cosmological parameter version of the CMB Fisher matrix from the CL version of the Fisher matrix by applying this general formula. The derivatives of CL were appearing here as the Jacobian. So this is the same transformation law as a metric in GR. And I actually find it kind of useful to think about the Fisher information as really being a metric and as defining a notion of distance on the parameter space. And the notion of distance that it defines is corresponds to observational distinguishability. In other words, two models, theta and theta prime, are separated by distance 1, Fisher distance 1. If a typical realization of the data will distinguish them at 1 sigma. So let me remind you that the Fisher matrix applies in a forecasting context where we have some specification of the probability distribution of a data set, but we haven't actually done the experiment. We don't have a realization yet. In that situation, I can still define distances between models based on how well I expect to distinguish them from each other. So then we can derive, if you have this picture and you're in the position of having learned GR first and learned statistics second, which is what most cosmologists do, including me, then you can derive a bunch of the theorems that are in statistics textbooks by using this type of special coordinate system argument. So here's an example. So here's a very useful formula that you use all the time if you become a professional Fisher matrixologist. Suppose I have some derived parameter on the model space. Which just means pi is a function of the coordinates theta, but it's not necessarily a basis parameter, i.e. one of the thetas that was used as a preferred coordinate when computing the Fisher matrix. So what is the What is the fully marginalized error? Meaning, if I float all of, if I do a forecast where I float all of the basis parameters and account for their covariances, then what error would I forecast on this non-basis parameter pi? And the answer is, geometrically, the right-hand side here could be interpreted covariantly as just the length of the gradient of pi, where I compute the length of a vector covariantly using the inverse of the Fisher matrix. And my argument for why this is the right formula is to go to a primed coordinate system. I claim that I can choose a coordinate system where in my primed coordinate system, I'm going to take the first basis parameter theta prime 1 to be the new parameter pi. And then I'll just choose the remaining basis parameters, theta prime 2, theta prime 3, and so on, so that f prime is diagonal. It's clear that I can make that choice because I just need to choose arbitrary functions whose gradients are orthogonal to each other in the sense of orthogonality defined by the Fisher matrix. Then in that coordinate system, in the prime coordinate system, the gradient of pi looks like this. Fisher matrix by construction is diagonal. Now, I'm working in a coordinate system where there's no the forecast shows no covariance between any of the parameters. So they're all independent of each other. And the error on pi in this coordinate system would just be given by, in general, the Fisher matrix is the inverse covariance. So I would take the, if I invert this matrix to get a variance and take the square root, I get this. And this is a non-scalar quantity. But as in the GR case, if I scratch my head and look for an expression I can write down in the prime coordinate system that does transform as a scalar, then I could do this. This vector, the gradient of pi, naturally has a lower index. So to get a scalar, I have to contract it with a tensor of two, with two upper indices. And the natural choice is f inverse. And what I have in braces here is just 1 over f11 prime in the prime coordinate system. And so this is a scalar. Its value has to be the same in all coordinate systems. And so this was the correct formula in the original coordinate system where pi was not a special basis parameter.
Explain again why you can always choose this coordinate system.
Oh yeah, so if you imagine building it up one parameter at a time. So I start by choosing theta 1 prime equal to pi. And then it's sort of, so in the original theta coordinate system, so all the condition that f prime is diagonal means is that the gradients of the basis parameters are orthogonal to each other. Orthogonal to each other in the Fisher matrix sense of orthogonality. And so so here's my proof by picture. I choose theta 1 prime equals pi, and that specifies the direction of the, that specifies the gradient of theta 1 prime. That's forced. And then I just choose an arbitrary direction that's orthogonal to that. Then I just choose theta 2 prime to be any function with that gradient. Like I could choose it to be a linear function of the original basis parameters theta. And then I choose theta 3 prime to be a function that's orthogonal to the two theta primes that have already been chosen. And so on. Okay. In particular, this rule includes the rule that we previously stated without giving a derivation, or at least a derivation that worked for an arbitrary number of dimensions. That if I'm interested in the statistical errors on the basis parameters, then what I do is I first invert the Fisher matrix and then read them off the diagonal. I take the square root of the diagonal entries. Square root of the diagonal elements of F inverse. So another thing that's sometimes that people sometimes do if they're interested in forecasting the statistical error on a non-basis parameter is rotate the Fisher matrix into the new basis, where you can read the statistical error off of the diagonal. So one of the problems on the problem set is to, on the problem set two, is to first compute a 6x6 Fisher matrix in some basis, and then for a particular derived parameter pi, show that these two methods agree. You could either do the forecast in the original basis by computing the gradient of pi and applying this formula, or you could rotate to a new basis where pi is one of the basis parameters. Here's another example. Use this board. Parameter forecasting is really common in cosmology, and it kind of has a reputation for being confusing. It's one of those topics that seems simple, but if you haven't seen a lot of examples, it can be more confusing than it might appear. Another question. So far we've talked about fully marginalized statistical errors, where we have the Fisher matrix in some, say, six-parameter space. And we want to forecast the error on some quantity, which may or may not be a basis parameter, assuming that all six of the basis parameters are allowed to float. But you might have a situation where you've computed the Fisher matrix in a larger parameter space than you want to consider. So just to be really general, let's say I'm given the Fisher matrix in n variables. And I want to know what's the statistical error just to keep things simple at first. suppose I'm interested in the statistical error on basis parameter 1. Assuming that parameters theta 2 through theta k are marginalized. So those parameters are allowed to float. But parameters, the remaining n minus k parameters are assumed fixed to their fiducial values. There's how you could do a forecast like this. And this, normally the subject is sort of presented as like a series of cookbook recipes. Like the cookbook might include a rule for addressing this case. But really the point I want to make is that if you remember that the Fisher matrix has two properties, it's additive. It accumulates additively as more data is analyzed, and it transforms as a tensor. Then if you forget the rules in the cookbook, they're pretty straightforward to derive. In this example, what I want to do is I start with the Fisher matrix in an, what's happening is that I'm starting with the Fisher matrix in an n parameter space, and I just want to restrict to the submodel a k parameter submodel in which the last n minus k parameters have just been fixed to their fiducial values. And then within that submodel, I want to compute the fully marginalized error. So the way that you would, what you would do is you would start with the n by n Fisher matrix. In this n parameter space. And then our general rule says that to restrict to a submodel like this, I just put in factors of the Jacobian of the submodel. And if you write that out, I'm going to do this example in like an abbreviated picture way. What that corresponds to is just keeping this k by k block. That's the Fisher matrix F prime in the k parameter space. Then if I want to compute the fully marginalized error on parameter 1, so now that I've just thrown away this part of the Fisher matrix and just kept its k by k upper left block, then I just apply the usual rule that says that I invert the Fisher matrix. And then take the corresponding diagonal element. It's going to be f prime inverse 1, 1. And the statistical error is just the square root of that diagonal element. So in this example, you'd throw away n minus k rows and columns, then invert, then throw away k minus 1 rows and columns to get a single number, and then that's giving you the statistical error. One more example from the cookbook. Which I wanted to make sure I got to today since it's in the problem set and I wanted to cover it quickly. is suppose I have, for example, 3. Given Fisher matrix FAB, so that represents the forecasted errors for some data set. Then suppose I want to modify the data set you modify the forecast. To include an external measurement of some parameter tau. Parameter pi with statistical error sigma squared, or with variance sigma squared. I said tau out loud since I was thinking of the example in the problem set where you do a forecast for the 6-parameter standard model and then modify it to include an external measurement of the CMB optical depth tau, which will be poorly constrained from the CMB temperature alone. So let me write down the answer first and then I'll explain how that answer is derived. So the answer is that you take the Fisher matrix that you had below, and you add this rank 1 matrix. So I just have 2 in tensor language. I should just take the gradient of the parameter pi. That's a tensor with 1 lower index. Take 2 copies of it so that now I have a tensor with 2 lower indices. And then just add that in with this factor of 1 over sigma squared. To derive this, let me offer 2 arguments. The first argument that I think I kind of like the best is to just view it as a combination of the 2 properties of the Fisher matrix. It's additivity and transformation law. To say that, so I had some data set, and I already did the Fisher matrix for that and got some Fisher matrix FAB. And then I can think of the external measurement as a new independent data set. You could imagine putting an experiment down here that just measures 1 number, namely the value of this parameter pi, with statistical error sigma. So let's call that D external. It's just a fake experiment that measures 1 number. And the external experiment, has the property that its parameter dependence factors like this. I can take my 6-parameter model and just compute this 1 number pi, projecting down, if you like, to a 1-parameter model. And that's the only model parameter that is important for determining this external piece of data, the external piece of data just being a measurement of parameter pi with some statistical error. So now if I chase this through the rules for the general properties that we wrote down, if I start here in the diagram, here I have a 1-parameter model space just consisting of the single basis parameter pi. And the Fisher matrix of this external measurement, if I have an external measurement of pi, of the basis parameter, with some statistical error sigma, all that I'm saying is that the 1-by-1 Fisher matrix is 1 over sigma squared. Call it F 1-by-1. Now, if I pull that one-by-one Fisher matrix back to this original model space, then I'll get a Fisher matrix. The general rule says I put in the Jacobian with the pulled back coordinates downstairs. And the original the Jacobian with the pullback coordinates downstairs and the forward coordinates upstairs. So that gives 1 over sigma squared times 2 factors of the gradient. And what I've computed here is just the Fisher matrix on this on the theta model space from the external data set only. So I'll call that F sub X. And then the additivity property says that if I had, if the original data set D gave some other Fisher matrix FAB, then the Fisher matrix corresponding to the combination of the original data and this external measurement is just given by adding the two terms together. Let me comment that you can also derive this rule by a special coordinate system argument by rotating to an appropriate basis where pi is one of the basis parameters. But since it's 12:30, I'll omit that second derivation. Okay. So in summary, information, or the information content of an experiment that hasn't been done yet, can be viewed, if you're willing to make a certain low-order approximation, the Fisher approximation, as a matrix quantity that transforms covariantly and can be thought of very similarly to the metric in GR. So next time, I have a few more things to say about the Fisher matrix just to wrap up. And then I'll talk about another mathematical machine that's even more interesting than the Fisher matrix called Monte Carlo markup chains.